A couple of thousand years ago in the Middle East, a man named Saul from Tarsus was an enthusiastic persecutor of Christians. In Gospel writer Luke's words, breathing threats and murder. Encouraging the stoning of Christian preacher Stephen was all in a day's work for Saul. One day, as he was traveling the road to Damascus, quote, a light from heaven flashed about him, and he fell to the ground, and he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Saul was struck blind, taken to Damascus, where he lay in darkness for 3 days, and then was visited by a Christian who told him that he had been spoken to by Jesus, and he could now regain his sight and be filled by Holy Spirit. The scales fell from his eyes. Saul became Paul, and he essentially founded the Christian religion, traveling all over his world with the good word, writing letters that are canonized in the Christian Bible. In this famous story, Saul essentially had his theology thrust upon him. And then he chose his life's work based on that. From a 21st century perspective, we might or might not approve of his world-changing work. But there's no question that he was preaching a New Testament of love and that he was preaching his passion with total integrity. It happens even in the present, an experience that marks us forever, that affects our values, our mission, our faith, what we know of God for the rest of our lives. Such experiences are profoundly transformative and formative. A lot of the time, though, it doesn't happen that way. It is no accident that Unitarian Universalists have that curriculum to which Lauren referred, building your own theology, not struck blind by your own theology. In that curriculum, as well as in this sermon, we use the word theology pretty loosely, so don't call me on it. I know I'm doing it. I'm referring, and so is the curriculum, to our highest and deepest values, including but not limited to concepts of the holy. The not-so-easy question is, how do we build our deep values and systems so that we continue to grow in love, in integrity, in service, and in connection? What avenues and attitudes and practices make it more likely that our choices will build wholeness, compassion, healing, and bonds? Now, some of our theology comes, of course, from before a time when we made many such choices. I asked church friends, I hope you all got the email, in a blanket email, for contributions to the subject, and I got some great responses. One person mentions a whole bunch of things that contributed to her highest and deepest values. Being raised a Catholic, having a tough and protective older brother who challenged her philosophically all her life, having an alcoholic father, a loving but codependent mother. Now, she doesn't tell us exactly how these affected her. Probably few of us actually know that kind of thing. But those of us who know her have no trouble tracing some of those to the caring woman that we know today. Kathy Carman was deeply affected by the awesome world of the Alaska Outback, where her family ventured with great frequency during the time her dad served as a congregational minister in Anchorage in the 60s. Her favorite hymn at that time holds profound theologies of faith. For the beauty of the earth, for the glory of the skies, for the love which from our birth over and around us lies. Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise. And in following verses, the song raises grateful praise for the mystic harmony that links sound and sight, for the joy of human love, for the church itself. It's easy to understand that Kathy, with that background, would make choices to turn to nature to find God, that she would marry a fellow beauty of the earth lover. Although, interestingly enough, he is an atheist slash humanist, which she is not. And those belief differences are so much less important than the shared enjoyment and reverence for the splendors of the natural world. Our belief systems can often be transcended by deep values. We all have had formative experiences that have guided us for good and ill toward what we have become and what we are becoming. At the same time, we return to the question that deals with all seeking people who are past childhood. How do we constantly build our deep value systems in the midst of life's mess so that we are people with nurtured souls and a passion for healing the world? This journey, each of us going to some Damascus, is forever providing us choices, opportunities for meanness or generosity, avoidance or depth, isolation or connection. Even poet Edna St. Vincent Millay, in the poem that Bill read, she finds the road pretty hard and discouraging, if you notice, but even she lifts up with joy, "The long white road, a gateless garden and an open path, my feet to follow and my heart to hold." Jeanette Ross replied in a poetic and lighthearted way, and she captures the complicated, messy, and humbling process of making our theological way in the world. Here's what Jeanette says. "My theology is in motion, which renders labels, isms, problematic." I think that's probably true for many of us. "One that fits fairly well, call me a religious humanist. Too many moving parts to be a philosophy. I balance myself on an acrobat's rope, wound from bits of the world's insights, looped across the abyss with faith in our capacity to work together for the common good, propelled by hope, rewarded by our ability to help and comfort each other. Picture me occasionally unnerved up here. As for tricks, I am a novice juggler, tossing words and catching most whoops as I walk the line. Faith and hope and love. Thanks, Jeanette." There are four other people who responded, all of whom shed light on this oft-perplexing topic. I have no idea what I would have done without them for this sermon. They echo much of what I found most valuable, what I have found as I wend my way toward integrity, and we can all learn from them. Their paths have involved self-reliance plus community, humble and honest openness to one's inner truths, and perhaps above all, paying close attention to the lessons of experience, mundane and cosmic, inner and outer, so that our choices are wholesome and we become at home in the world. Tom Von Alton reminded me of a favorite song of mine, Ripple, the Grateful Dead song, which was the subject of the second Sunday service I ever conducted here in September of 1988. Now, synchronistically enough, you're going to be hearing a lot more about that song this spring as I reprise it because it's so important. But Tom's take on it parallels what I love about it. It has both relationship and solo responsibility. The relationship part, if my words did glow with the gold of sunshine and my tunes were played on a harp unstrung, would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it near as it were your own? Relationship. And yet there's the inescapable fact of our solo journey. The song says that there's a road, no simple highway, between the dawn and the dark of night, and that path is for your steps alone. Kristen Bergeson emphasizes the relationship side in a touching story about her gradual move into community here at this church. She is not particularly given to philosophizing or to reading theological tomes, unlike her husband, Lauren, who spoke to us this morning. And so when she first came here, she felt surrounded by people who were too smart. I actually remember well those early times, how she seemed detached from us. And then she says she started noticing in smaller groups the kindness and the compassion that she was shown. She says, in May this year, I experienced a very difficult and emotional personal struggle. I attended BOOF every Sunday in May, even when my family did not want to come with me. I felt such overwhelming connectedness with the congregation. I realized how powerful the community can be for each individual. She was one of those people who sat and didn't speak aloud, but was comforted. Our Damascus roads are ultimately each one for our steps alone. And at the same time, we can sit without talking in the midst of caring people and know that they hold our joys and sorrows near as if they were their own. Patricia Hebe echoes Kristen. She says, I have learned again that participation in the collective enriches my individual experience of theology. Now, Mark Zimmerer takes the idea of connection even further, telling a story of connection on both huge and atomic scales. It's a story, a complicated story, too complicated to tell right now, a story of wholes and parts connected in ways that are mystical and real and hard to imagine. And he says, if we make continual, honest attempts to listen deeply to ourselves, we will be heard by the forces larger than ourselves. Are we hearing themes here? If we take seriously our responsibility to become better human beings, we will be paying humble, honest attention to ourselves and what's around us as we walk our path. We will learn from all experience through the filters of love, integrity, service, and connection. And not incidentally, several of the writers expressed or implied deep gratitude for beauty, for love, for the constant opportunities to build our theologies alone and with others. As I finish today, I want to lift up one of the primary ways that our theology is built through mindfully attending our lives, and that is through suffering. The Duke in As You Like It says, what does he say? Something about the uses of adversity. Patricia addressed it directly when she said, I learned that even in suffering, there is divine working. Now, Patricia is a retired psychotherapist, so she has seen a lot of suffering people. You may have heard about the golfer who asked his partner, what's your handicap? And the partner replied, my childhood. The suffering of our childhood is a big one for a lot of us. Another is that each of us has suffered loss after loss. We may have suffered at the hands of an authoritarian or abusive religion. Tragedy abounds in human life. And the small daily or perhaps even hourly sufferings that we encounter every single day of our lives are probably at least as important as the great big occasional ones. Annoying people. I suffer from them all the time. Traffic. Being overscheduled. The cat knocks over the plant, and always at the worst time. The company's about to come. The kids haven't done what they're supposed to do. The partner is late, probably again, and they won't let us in after the show starts. The list really does go on and on. The Buddhists have it right when they say that human existence is suffering. For me, the principles are the same whether the suffering is genuine tragedy or the wearing down niggles of everyday life, which we must not discount because they're with us all the time. The principles are pretty much the ones that our church friends have spoken of. Self-reliance combined with passionate and grateful connection to community. Paying close attention to the lessons of experience, mundane and cosmic. Humble and open, honest openness to one's inner truths. Gratitude. Yesterday didn't have any tragic drama in it for me, but it was a perfectly ordinary day of building my own theology. I was gone last week, so I was behind in sermon writing. I just about never approach a Saturday with so little done, and it was nerve-wracking. That's suffering. I exercised my self-reliance. I got up really early and got busy after exercising, which gives me the physical health and energy to do all that self-reliance stuff. Still not finishing before I needed to head out to the church board retreat at 9 a.m. at the art studio of board president Judy Holcomb. Nerves racked again. Suffering. So as I drove to Damascus, Garden City, I sang made up prayerful songs about appreciating the sky and the trees, and Mother Mary, and music, and the interesting things that were going on around me at the time. This practice almost always moves me away from my terrible suffering into a much better perspective on my place and my perceived troubles, and it worked fine yesterday. Parenthetically and non-ironically, the practice actually does also relieve big suffering, but not in a 20-minute drive. It takes a long time. I arrived at the retreat, and I was centered, and I was okay, and I was happy to be there, and I spent a delightful 5 or so hours with community, dedicated people who care enormously about all the aspects of this church that I love so much. Relationship, organization, worship, social justice, having fun. It was easy to be present to such well-prepared, conscientious, humorous colleagues, and Judy gave us really good food. I have had huge experiences like Saul's conversion, to be sure, as probably most of you have. These do change our lives, propelling us to make certain choices forever. At the same time, it's probably the ordinary Saturdays that really build our theologies. It is the day-to-day gratitude, love of community, individual responsibility, deep honesty, exquisite attention that move us toward love and integrity and service and connection. May it be so.